Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. Well, I hope you had a wonderful Christmas, or at least you got through it, you know, whichever it is for you. There's been so many mixed emotions in our Sober Club community. A lot of people kind of saying, oh my goodness, everyone around me is just absolutely driving me nuts and I just can't cope. It is such an emotional time when we're sort of forced into situations with people that we don't normally spend a lot of time with, but they happen to be family, and perhaps, you know, you're kind of not necessarily feeling on top form, or maybe your views are just so completely different, or maybe you've stopped drinking and they haven't, and there's just a million different things to have to navigate. So perhaps it's been an emotional few days for you, but and this is a weird time as I record this. It's Twixmas, you know, it's that weird time between Christmas and New Year, and it really does feel as though we're kind of in limbo. But it's actually a good time for reflection. I do believe that. We have our session on Monday. I don't know if you're listening, depending on when you're listening to this, you've still got time to join us if it's before Monday the 2nd. We're doing a special session on setting your intentions for 23. And what we're going to look at is what we need to let go of. So what can we actually leave behind leave it in 22, as it were? What do we actually want for 2023? If you're interested in joining us, it's a real small charge for the Sober Club Give Back Fund. So just go to thesoberclub.com and click on the link there, and I'll put it in the show notes as well. And pleased that my guest, a special guest for that, is Susan from Whole is Sober. She's going to share some tips around ritual and how we can just sort of introduce ritual into our daily lives. And I've got another special guest, actually. Bev Densham is going to do a piece for us on affirmations as well, which is perfect for this time of year. But there'll be something for everybody. It really is a kind of a workshop. It doesn't matter what stage you're at with anything. We've all got stuff we want to let go of, right? And we've all got stuff we want to move towards. So if you're able to join us for that session on Monday, the 2nd of Jan at 4 o'clock, it'd be great to connect with some podcast listeners. It's online, obviously. But for everyone, I do really think it's a good time to just spend a few moments letting go, just reflecting on what we want to leave behind without beating ourselves up, without guilt, without shame, without fury at what we didn't do well enough. Just have a look at, okay, well, what's worked, what hasn't, and what do I want to leave behind in 22? What do I no longer need in my life? And I've become such a big believer in our choice to be able to raise our vibration. I really believe we can do that. Raise our vibration and let go of what's not serving us. I know it's easier said than done. And when I've obviously had a very emotional Christmas with my mum passing, it's a very odd thing. And you find yourself kind of crying at seemingly nothing. But I just think when you're able to just step into asking you, it's about questions, isn't it? It's about asking yourself the right questions and being able to become curious. Sometimes we have to sit with the emotions. We don't like doing that much. I think when you first stop drinking, that's the time, we've said this before a lot, but that's the time when you have to realize, you have to feel the feels, all of them. You have to be able to sit with emotions and allow them and notice them. And from that place, become curious as to what it is that you want. How do you want to be? How can you be rather than just what can you do? And of course, that lovely question, how can you be more you? How can you bring more joy into your life? Whatever that is for you. I think sometimes when we're really stuck, that's perhaps the only question to start with, is breathe and ask yourself, how can I bring more joy into my life? And definitely that the ability to be able to start to think like that comes with being sober. I really think that's the case. I am actually super proud of myself there. I've said it, I'll let it out. I am 5 years sober today as I record this podcast on Friday 30th of December. 5 years sober. It's just, it feels so fantastic. And when I think back, I can remember exactly how I was feeling on this day 5 years ago. I knew something had to change. I absolutely knew. I knew it was time. But did I think I could do it? No. Did I think it would be forever? No. I thought, okay, I have to do something. I'll just do Dry January. I'll just do a couple of weeks. As I've said many times, we were going to be interviewing Claire Pooley. And I'd been reading The Sober Diaries. And I remember as I read that book, I devoured it in a couple of days after Christmas. And I remember thinking, oh, well, I could wait till Dry January. But I just knew, what was the point of doing that? What was the point of going through a boozy new year when I knew everything I knew, when the light had come on, that, you know, there really are no benefits. The Emperor's actually not wearing any clothes and life might be better without it. So I stopped on the 30th. And of course, the first couple of days were relatively easy because I just, said, OK, I'll drive to the New Year's Eve party. And I had the foresight to take along some alcohol free something or other. But it was after that, you know, that it came trickier when I started to realise, OK, I'm going to have to start feeling some emotions here. I can't just reach for a drink every time one of the kids annoy me or something at work kicks off. I've actually got to, you know, step into my kind of big girl pants and put my sober shoes on. There's a lot of getting dressed. It's just amazing when I think back now how I was then, when I think about all the different little nuances of the way I was feeling and my interactions with other people. It's actually impossible to list the benefits because they're so complex. Of course, there's obvious things. You know, there's physical things, there's very obvious things like having more energy and better sleep and skin clearing up and, you know, sober hair, who knew? There's physical things and there's obvious things, but there's so much more than that. It's so many complex layers of just becoming authentic, becoming who you really are, starting to actually like yourself. Oh my God, cannot begin to tell you. Nobody can explain that bit to you. You have to experience it for yourself. And I really hope that with these podcasts, if I've done nothing but just give you that little glimpse of possibility that you too could actually start to like yourself, because I certainly didn't think it was possible for me. Until I actually did this hard thing. You've got a million things you can listen to. There are so many podcasts out there, including mine. There are so many ways of connecting with what inspires you. But get inspired. So if you're at the stage I was at 5 years ago, if you're thinking, oh, it's time, but, you know, maybe I'll do Dry January. Absolutely do Dry January and beyond. But start now. Start today. You've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. Absolutely everything to gain. Where was I anyway before I went off on that? Yeah, so I'm 5 years sober. And when I think back to when I was drinking, I used to do that stupid thing every New Year, every Twixmas, of getting my, you know, big bit of paper and writing up my resolutions. And of course, top of the list would always be, I will give up wine. Well, you know, you've got a problem with the language for starters, because you really are not giving up anything. You know, I will go to the gym every day. Oh, ha ha. You know, I will give up chocolate. I will learn the piano. I mean, who was I kidding? You know, I think I had four young kids at the time. And I didn't go to the gym. I didn't stop drinking. I didn't stop eating chocolate. And I most certainly didn't learn the piano. I mean, it was all just nonsense, absolute nonsense. It's resolutions are just so ridiculous. They just set us up to fail. What we really need to do is let go of what we no longer need. Let go of what's not serving us and become curious about what might serve us. Decide what is it that we want. What are our intentions? What would we love to have happen? How would we like to be? And don't forget that part of it, because it's not just a big wish. Oh, I wish that would happen to me. I wish, because that ain't gonna happen, is it? You know, just, oh, I wish I could just be, I don't know, beamed to another country and offered the job of my dreams, or become hugely rich, or whatever daft things we say that don't really mean anything. anything. It has to be based in some kind of reality. But if when we begin to set our intentions and we can actually visualize what it might be like to step into that energy, have to be able to visualize it. Well, most of us do. I think it's really important to be able to put the detail on what it is we want. So spend a bit of time doing that. Set intentions. Forget the resolutions. They never work. Don't use the phrase give up, because you're not losing anything. Just set your intention. Perhaps you've been sober for years like me, and now it's something else you want to work on, because, you know, there's always something, right? So we're going to be doing a whole lot of that on Monday, and I'd really encourage you to sit down and just grab a notebook and just make a little note of some of these amazing just some of the blessings and some of the things you want to let go on, that you want to let go of. And you can ask yourself, what advice would I like to give myself? What if I was, the wise guru, what advice would I like to give myself? You know, sweetheart, let go of that. Okay. And for next year, let's have a bit more of this. Okay. Just ask yourself, what would make this my best year? What is it that I want? What is it that I need to live my best life? And, what makes me happy? Literally, what brings me joy? And you can also ask yourself, what's the lesson I've learned? Are there some lessons that I've learned? And what have I learned from those lessons? So, yeah, a little bit of reflection, a little bit of intention setting, I think is a fantastic thing to do at this time of year. And as I say, if you can join us Monday, it would be great to have you on board. I just want to say a huge thank you to all of the guests who've been on this podcast across this last year. Honestly, it's just been fantastic. This is my absolute labour of love. I love doing this work and I love bringing these podcasts to you, and I haven't had a week off in 4 years. and as long as I've got amazing guests, I'll do it, So I am incredibly blessed, really, really lucky to have had some incredible guests over the last year. I can't list them all, of course, and I don't even want to, pick out faves, because they've all been good. But do scroll back through the archives and have a listen, because there's some absolute gems in there. And I'm hugely grateful as well to a few of the brands that have given us a little bit of support on some of the episodes and teamed up with us. Most recently, Everleaf Drinks, and there's a lovely competition to win a set of Everleaf drinks. And there's also a competition to win New London Light, a lovely hamper of New London Light drinks with Fever Tree tonics. Actually, there's also that discount code for New London Light. If you didn't catch the podcast last week, from Salcombe Distillery, New London Light have got a 20% offer. So it's NLL, that's capital letters, NLL20, if you want to grab yourself some of that. So a big thank you to those that have supported us. And also thank you to you if you've gone on to the little buy me a coffee thing and bought me a coffee, a monetary coffee anyway. It's so much appreciated. It's just buymeacoffee.com/Jenny Lee Grace, I think. Anyways, that's much appreciated. And obviously, if you are a member of the Sober Club, I mean, honestly, that really is my life's work. And I just can't say thank you enough for being part of that community. We all benefit as much as each other. I really believe that, whether you're day one and you come along for lots of support and encouragement and accountability, or whether you've been sober longer than I have and we're all working on amazing things together, uncovering what the next little gem is that we can unwrap. We've got some great stuff coming up in the Sober Club. A sugar detox expert's going to be chatting with us next week. We're going to do our juice challenge. We've got lots of stuff around nutrition, obviously, but also mindset. We have more meditation experts coming on board. We've got a whole bunch of stuff. So there really is something for everyone. So if you're still thinking about that, do check out thesoberclub.com. And a big thank you as well to everyone who's been part of the events that we've had over the last year, the retreat, self-care and sobriety retreats at Champneys. I've got one coming up in February. Our Sober by the Sea events, which have just been such fun, so lovely, in sunny Southend, or maybe freezing at some point. We've got another one of those coming up in February as well, where we create a vision board. So that's really exciting. It's the perfect thing to do, actually. for another year is to create a vision board for you, for what it is that you really want, what your unconscious mind wants. So they've been amazing events. And also, of course, our Family Constellations events. Who'd have thought that when I look back now, it's incredible to me that since, you know, stopping drinking, I have obviously formed the Sober Club and the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I did my TEDx talk, but I've also done all this training. And you know, I've always been such a big fan of family constellations. Never would I have considered that I would be a practitioner in this work. And it just feels so amazing to be doing this incredible work. So the family constellations workshops have been brilliant. And we've got another one on January the 22nd, Sunday, January the 22nd in Hertfordshire. So, you know, they're life changing. So come if you can, if you're in the UK. And if not, we will do something online, too. On that note, by the way, I'm going to be rerunning a little clip of an interview with Mark Wolin. So that will be coming up very soon. But yes, I was just in the middle of thanks. And so, yeah, a huge thank you to you if you listen to this podcast, if you've ever shared it or told your friends about it or rated it, reviewed it, if you've bought me a coffee, if you've been to an event, if you're a member of the Sober Club. I'm just very, very grateful because sharing this work feels just so massively important. And I remember thinking when I first stopped drinking, you know, because I was already doing my stuff around natural health, obviously. And I remember thinking, well, I won't mention this sobriety thing. I'll just carry on with all my holistic living stuff, but I won't mention this piece. I mean, really, what was I thinking? How could I not? It was literally the missing piece of the jigsaw. I've been talking about every aspect of holistic living, of you know, well-being and spirituality, every single aspect, and yet stepping around this huge goddamn elephant in the room. And at first, I didn't think I'd ever be brave enough to share it, but thankfully I was, and I'm so very grateful that I have this platform to be able to hopefully inspire people. That's really all I want to do. I just want everybody to know there is nothing to lose and everything to gain. Let's shout that one from the rooftops, because sobriety really does rock. So a huge thank you to all of you. And if, by the way, if you want to inspire other people, of course, the other thing that I've started in the last year and a half is my Sober Coach training program. And we do have another course in March. We have one in January that's sold out, one that starts in March. And although the price is going up, if you get in contact, make contact with me before the end of this year, then we can lock in the 2022 prices. I appreciate that's not everyone, but if you're listening to this and you've been thinking, I'm at a stage where I really want to inspire other people, I know that's my calling in one way or another, whether that's workshops or hosting sessions or doing one-to-one work. There are so many different ways of using the sobriety coach training. So if that's of interest, just drop me a message, get in touch. I'm very easy to find all across social media at Janie Lee Grace or via the Sober Club. So so get in touch. Anyways, for this week's podcast, I've just picked out, I mean, I can't exactly say at random, but I've just picked out a couple of interviews and taken a little section from a couple of them. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to rerun these interviews. They're both hugely important. I know all my interviews are important, but I've been kind of thinking about the whole well-being thing, the whole being healthy. I mean, isn't that what all of us want, that optimum health and well-being? It underpins absolutely everything. And one of my favourite guests, or in fact, the person I've loved meeting this year, just who has made possibly the greatest impact on me, is Clive DeCarle, who is a health educator. I've absolutely loved meeting Clive. I now bang on, I think it's fair to say, about his supplements. And if you go to the show notes, there is a link to buy Clive's supplements. And there's a tiny little kickback. He puts a tiny little amount into my Sober Club Give Back Fund. So yes, for full transparency, the Sober Club benefits, which helps us with people who can no longer afford memberships. But there is a link there to buy his supplements. But I'm only recommending them because I think they're amazing, literally amazing. And when you first stop drinking and ongoing, there are some supplements that we need. I do believe that. I think pretty much everybody needs Clive's magnesium. And certainly if you're in the early stages then it's just the most amazing recovery supplement. So I thought it would be really good to run that interview again, or run part of that interview again with Clive, where he explains so clearly that, you know, that when it comes to illness, when it comes to dis-ease, there are some components that we tend to forget. Often it's because we're deficient in something, you know, we're really deficient, or that we're toxic. It's often one or the other, right? And then because, of course, we need to add to those two very important considerations, the whole emotional piece, that's also hugely important. And so to that end, I thought I'd play a little section of Clive's podcast, Clive's interview, and then follow that with a section from the Mark Wolin interview, which I think I've probably had more response to than anything I've done. Mark Wolin is the author of It Didn't Start With You. And he basically shared a whole bunch of information about inherited family trauma. Family constellations is so difficult to describe and explain, but Mark describes it really well. He explains inherited family trauma and what it really is. So I thought actually those two podcasts, those two interviews complement each other really well, because we've got a kind of really practical approach from Clive. And OK, well, what can we really do then? How can we ensure that we're not deficient in the right minerals and vitamins and all that, we're not toxic? I mean, stopping drinking will help, right? And then to layer on top of that, what about the emotional piece? How can we actually start to become aware of what we might be carrying that isn't even ours? That we might be carrying something that doesn't belong to us. And as I say, that's where Family Constellations comes in. And we do have our workshop, January, Sunday, 22nd of January. That's in Hertfordshire. All that info is under events, by the way, on thesoberclub.com. So really hope you enjoy these clips. And if you don't make it to the end of this podcast, I'm going to say now, I will see you next year and have a wonderful new year. So here's Clive.
I realised that there are only a few things, a few minerals, vitamins, essential fats and amino acids that we actually need. And, you know, 10 years ago, I had a website which had over 100 different supplements on it. My current website, I've slimmed it right down.
Yeah, I love the fact that you have made it really, really accessible, because you're right. And sorry to interrupt you, but I think this is so important, because over the years I've been kind of working in this field, I've always found it just exhausting to try to determine which supplements you really need. And if you're not careful, you can end up taking 50 or 60 different supplements four times a day. You're just going to be rattling. No one can really do that. You know, it's exhausting, isn't it?
Well, exactly. So I worked out that there are about 10 core supplements that everybody needs to consider at various stages in their life. Mm. Magnesium is so huge because everybody is stressed right now in the world, you know, more than we should be. And to cope with stress, we burn through magnesium. So if you've burnt through your magnesium reserves, what might happen is you might start getting one of the following. You might start getting twitches around the eyes. You might get cramps. You know, it could be menstrual cramps, could be cramps in your leg, could be cramps in your foot, any type of cramping. It could be that you're getting anxious and panic attacks. Yeah. Could be that your heart is beating in an uneven manner. You've got atrial fibrillation. It could be that you're constipated. Could be that you can't sleep properly. Could be that you've got hiccups or get hiccups. There are so many things that magnesium controls, i.e. pain. Anybody who's in pain, they've got muscle aches, tendon aches, joint aches, anybody who's scheduled for a hip operation or that type of thing, you've got back pain, I can almost guarantee that 95% of us will be low on magnesium.
All things being equal, given that, you know, the soil isn't great and stress and everything else makes us depleted. And as you say, we're not getting enough because our diets are changed. I mean, there's not a lot of people who don't eat enough, you know, sort of fruit and veg anyway. So, you know, if you're eating a highly processed diet, you're going to be even lower in the magnesium. Is there anything we need to know about supplementation? I mean, is there, you know, what would be the limit we should take? Because I think most of us, if we think about taking magnesium, in reality, we think every now and then we remember and we take a capsule if we remember. And then we've probably been told by somebody at some point, you can't have magnesium without calcium. So we probably buy calcium tablets as well. And then we forget and the problems are still there.
Right. So 99% of people do not need calcium. If you're supplementing with calcium, you might want to seriously consider stopping, because you may well be doing more harm than good. With magnesium, you know, there's this thing, the RDA, the recommended daily allowance. Mm. Now, this was worked out, I think, in the Second World War. What is the absolute minimum you need to give the soldiers so they don't die? You know, enough vitamin C so they don't get scurvy, that kind of stuff. It wasn't the ideal amount. Mm. So the ideal amount of magnesium for women is 380 milligrams and 400 milligrams for men. So the average capsule may have, let's say, 500 or 600 milligrams of a magnesium salt in it. So it might be magnesium citrate, it might be whatever type
it
is.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the different types. Yeah.
But the amount of elemental magnesium in one 500 milligram capsule may only be, let's say, 100 or mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. So people look at it and think, well, let's say they read the RDA, they might think that one 500 gram capsule is what they need. But in actual fact, they might need 3 or 4 to get to the RDA.
Right.
Now, if somebody's got arthritis or they've got serious pain, serious calcifications, they may need up to, for a short time, assuming their kidneys are in good condition, maybe up to 12 capsules a day of the right stuff, not the wrong stuff, 12 capsules a day for a short time, so that their depression ends. I've had people who went from suicidal to not suicidal in 36 hours.
Wow.
Right? With this sort of dosage.
So there's no sort of contraindications then that people need to be worried about?
Only if you've got a serious kidney issue would you not want to do high amounts.
Right.
But the body's self-regulating. Mm. You take too much at once or too much over a day, the body self-regulates.
To the bathroom.
To the bathroom, straight to the bathroom.
Same as with vitamin C, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a bit of a game changer for many of the people who will be listening to this, because lots of the people listening to this will have stopped drinking, or they're in the process of trying to stop drinking. They were never at rock bottom, but they were drinking more than they wanted to for years, you know, as I was, just sort of caught in the alcohol trap. And of course, when you stop, everything needs to recalibrate. You know, you've got all kinds of stuff going on, your neurotransmitters, you've got all the mindset piece, but you've also got the physical piece. And I know when I stopped for about, gosh, it must have been for at least 4 or 5 weeks, I was having just about every symptom you mentioned there, the leg cramps, the sort of feeling panicky and anxious, everything you mentioned there, aches, pains for seemingly no reason. I mean, obviously the alcohol had been masking it before, hadn't it? So, you know, and of course I couldn't sleep. And it's something that my clients say to me all the time. Okay, I stopped drinking 6 weeks ago, 3 months ago, I still can't sleep. And I'm guessing you're going to tell me that this could be the key. The magnesium could be the key here.
Well, it's one of them. There are two other keys for people who want to come off alcohol. One of them is the mineral selenium.
Yeah. I've heard you talk about this. And what's interesting there, just to butt in again, is that every time I read about selenium, you know, what I hear is, oh, be careful, because too much is dangerous. So you end up taking none.
Yes. So the version that I recommend is non-toxic.
Okay.
And that's an important factor. You know.
Yes, of course.
The problem is with supplements is that there are two types of supplement manufacturers, the ones that care and the ones that don't.
Yes, yes.
Right? And I would suggest 90% of the supplement companies out there have actually been bought out.
Right.
By companies you wouldn't like.
So there's just loads of fillers and stuff in there, basically, and crap that you don't need. And not much
of the
actual.
They'll choose the ingredients that won't work. I mean, if you look for the main magnesium, the chances are it'll be magnesium oxide, which is the one type you don't want.
Right.
It really is. But it's way cheaper than some of the other types.
Yes.
So they're going to use it. And then people say, well, look, I tried magnesium. I said, which type? Oxide. I said, did it work? No. How many did you take? two, or they say they took three and they got diarrhea, because magnesium oxide is good for giving you diarrhea, but it's mm-hmm. not much good for anything else because it's not bioavailable properly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like a blend of about four different magnesiums in capsules. I don't like tablets so much because they've got the binders and the fillers and the glues to hold them together. So, you know, it's pure a capsule. You know, I ended up buying a couple of encapsulation machines so that we can make our own products cleanly, because two ways to make products. For instance, you can run the machine fast, but to do that, you need to add slippery powders to make it run through quickly, or you can run it slower, and then you don't need the slippery powders. So we try in all cases to, even if we do have to use a slippery powder, we'll use something natural rather than something unnatural. Mm. It's quite an art to making supplements.
I bet it is. Yeah, and we'll put the link to your supplements. So you were telling me about selenium. So
yes,
back on what we were saying about selenium. So it's in a drop form or capsule form?
This is liquid in drop form.
Okay.
And a normal dose would be something like maybe one drop every 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. You don't need a lot of it.
Okay.
However, I've had various people who've taken much higher doses for 3 days, and I've had people. That 40 years ago, they were using this particular type of selenium, which is generally not available anywhere, hardly. It's been sort of lost, to get people off methadone and heroin in New York. Wow. Massive trial.
Wow. What would be the reason? Why does it work?
How it works is that, you know, let's say you're drinking red wine every day. And let's make the assumption that that is to some degree a toxin. Mm. So the body says, there's this toxin coming in every day. So the body will do its best to make antitoxins to cancel it out and stop your liver being damaged or whatever it is. So most people sort of go cold turkey and they stop. Now, a serious alcoholic, as you know, is going to get the DTs,
of course,
or whatever. But you can turn that off with selenium. Selenium has the incredible effect of turning off the antitoxins.
So is what you're saying then that I mean, because we know that when it comes to coming off alcohol, you know, we have a percentage that is physical and a percentage that is what's going on emotionally, of course. But am I right in thinking that what you're saying is, if you were to have something like the selenium, it would make the miserable effects less, so you're absolutely not going to be, you're not going to crave something to stop the hideous feeling as much.
It's one of the factors.
Yeah.
Another factor is amino acids.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know,
if we look at 30% of the population, and I include myself in it, 30% of us are addicts or have the potential to be addicts. We can easily, you know, I'm probably more of a chocolate addict, but We can all do that. So it turns out 30% of us don't have the full quotient of dopamine receptors in the brain that the other lucky 70% have.
Yes, which is why we're seeking it all the time. Yeah.
Well, exactly. But what fills the gap is the essential amino acids, i.e. the ones you have to get from outside, your body can't make them. I mean, let's assume that an awful lot of people who have a problem with drugs or alcohol probably aren't feeding themselves as well as they should.
Absolutely. I was just about to say that. It's so important, isn't it, to get the good nutrition right.
So there are various supplements which are absolutely key to putting those missing ingredients back. I mean, we talked about magnesium.
Yeah.
Vitamin C is crucial. Anybody who's got any sort of thing that you might catch needs to realize that vitamin C is super important. You combine vitamin D, vitamin C, a bit of zinc, maybe magnesium. Then there are a few other things.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that. I love the fact that you've kind of curated the information, haven't you? So that it's a bit more accessible. Thank you, Clive. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Clive. So please do look at the show notes for this podcast, or if you go to thesoberclub.com and along the news screeny bit at the top, You'll see a picture that says supplements for recovery, and you can click there, click onto the link. If you use that link to buy any of your supplements, then there's a little kickback into the Sober Club Give Back Fund. So it's a bit of a win-win. I really, really recommend trying these. They're just the most amazing quality. And if you have any questions, just pop me an email, because I'm always doing more work with Clive, so there's always things that we can do. In the Sober Club, Clive's going to do a special Q&A for us as well. So without further ado, as we've already said, there's an emotional piece to everything too. It's never only the physical, it really is the holistic picture. So here's another chance to hear the interview with Mark.
So for anyone who really has not got any clue what we're talking about, can you define for us then what inherited family trauma is?
Well, let's say one of our parents or grandparents had a significant trauma. They lost their mother or their father when they were young, or our mother or father, they were sent away, they were raised by a relative, they were placed in an orphanage, or maybe one of their siblings died tragically when they were young. And an event like this can break the heart of the family. But the reaction to the trauma doesn't necessarily stop with the people who experienced it. For example, the feelings, the sensations, specifically the stress response, the way the genes express, this can pass forward to the children and the grandchildren, affecting them in a similar way, even though they didn't personally experience the trauma.
It's incredible, isn't it? And I know it's only in relatively recent years that we've sort of started talking about this whole field of epigenetics and what it really means. And I was really struck when I read your book, that when you explained something that I ought to have known, but I don't think I did know, that, you know, just explain to us how, you know, for a woman giving birth to a daughter, there's the grandmother's eggs in there as well.
Right. So when our grandmother is 5 months pregnant with our mother will have all the eggs. You know, the female cell line, the egg line, stops dividing in the fifth month of pregnancy. So all the eggs that our mother has and she'll ever have will be embedded in her womb while she's embedded in our grandmother's womb. And of course, one of those eggs in our mother's womb is then us.
Yeah.
So really, you know, you can look at in a way where three generations are sharing the same biological environment.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, tell us how this is kind of based in science, this stuff, in scientific research.
Okay. So as infants, you know, we don't enter the world with a clean hard drive. You would think we do. They used to think we did. We entered the world that way. But to continue with this computer analogy, there seems to be an operating system already in place, one that contains the fallout from the traumas that our parents or grandparents experienced. And then here we are, born with fears and feelings that don't always belong to us. And when we look at the science, the trauma, a trauma in general, it changes us.
Yeah.
Literally, it causes a chemical change in our DNA. And this can change how our genes function, sometimes for generations. So technically, after this traumatic event, there'll be a chemical tag that attaches to our DNA and tells our cells to use or ignore certain genes, so we can better deal with this trauma that just took place. And then the way our genes are affected changes how we act or feel. For example, we can become sensitive or reactive to situations that are similar to the original trauma, even if that trauma occurred in a past generation, so that we have a better chance of surviving it in this generation. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
If our grandparents came from a war-torn country, so let's say people are being shot or bombs are going off or uniformed men are lining people up in the square and people are being taken away, our grandparents would develop and pass forward a particular skill set designed to help them deal with that trauma. So let's say they would develop a skill set of sharper reflexes or quicker reaction times or reactions to the violence they experienced or the violence they witnessed to help them survive this trauma. Well, that's what they're in essence passing forward. Now, the problem is here we are in the next generation inheriting a stress response with the dials set to 10, prepared for this war, prepared for this catastrophe that never arrives. And we rarely make the link that our anxiety, our hypervigilance, our depression, our addiction response is connected to our parents and our grandparents. We just think we're wired this way.
Yeah. Yeah. We just think that's how we are. How did you get involved in this work?
Well, many years ago, without knowing why I was doing what I was doing, I had symptoms that I couldn't explain. You know, I always like to say many of us are living with this mystery, these feelings, this depression, this anxiety, these symptoms, and we have no clue as to what's going on. For me, 30 years ago, I began to lose the vision in one of my eyes. And I was, you know, I went to the doctors and I was diagnosed with this chronic form of retinopathy. And the doctors then told me that there was no cure for it. And the way that it was progressing, because I had it in both eyes, I would likely lose the vision in the other eye too. And here I am thinking that I'm going to be completely blind and there's no cure. And Western medicine at the time, well, even now, has no cure for it. So I was desperate to find some help. And I went on a search for healing. What that meant is I'd hear somebody talk, or I learned of somebody that I thought had answers, or I read a book. Anyway, this search leads me halfway around the globe, as far as Indonesia, where I learned from several wise teachers who taught me some fundamental principles, one of which is the importance of healing my relationship with my parents. My parents. But before I could do that, I had to heal what stood in the way, inherited family trauma, which I don't realize that at the time, but specifically the anxiety that I had inherited from each of my grandparents, all of whom were orphaned in some way. Three of them lost their mothers when they were babies, and the fourth grandparent lost her father when she was one. So ultimately, she would have lost her mother in the grief. And this anxiety was the real cause of my vision loss. I remember, you know, just like my parents, I had inherited this feeling of being broken from my mother's love. And this was what had been passed down in my family, because of course they all lose their mothers. And I remember being a small boy, maybe I'm 5 or 6 years old, and I feel panicked every time my mom would leave the house, and I'd run into her room and I'd cry. I'd open her drawers and cry into her scarves and her nightgowns, thinking that I'd never see her again. Mm-hmm. And that her smell would be the only thing that I had left, which would have been true for my grandparents who all lose their moms when they're little. All they would have had was some piece of clothing or blanket, you know, with a mother's smell. 40 years later, I shared this with my mom. I said, you know, mom, when you'd leave, I used to cry in your clothes. And she said, oh, I did that too when my mother left the house. And then my sister, reading the book, said, honey, I did the same thing when mom left the house too. I cried into her clothes. So really, this was the family pattern that we're all inheriting, this feeling of we'll never have our mother. And, you know, it led to a broken attachment.
Yeah.
And so after healing this broken attachment with my mom, a strange thing happened, Janie. My vision came back. My sight came back.
Wow.
And then afterwards, I felt compelled to share these principles that I had learned. And ultimately, I developed this method for healing the effects of inherited family trauma.
Incredible. So from what you've just described then, and certainly from some of the work that I've seen with family constellations, it's important then to be connected, or at least to know some information about your family of origin. I mean, what about for people who maybe don't, you know, if you hadn't have known or hadn't have had a way of knowing that that had happened, if you saw what I mean, what happens then? Is it how important is it to know exactly what the stories or the realities were for the past generations?
It's important if we have the information, but just as you said, Janie,
you might not have.
Yeah, a lot of us don't have it because we're adopted, or our parents don't talk about the past, or our parents are deceased. But what I've discovered is this information lives in our trauma language, both our verbal and our nonverbal trauma language. So it's in our fears. It's in our unexplained symptoms. It's in our self-destructive behaviors. It's in our self-sabotaging behaviors. It lives in the symptoms of an illness or the symptoms of our addiction that appear after maybe an unsettling event takes place. It lives in our relationship struggles, the repeated ways we deal with partners, the way we deal with money, the way we deal with success. All of this can give us a glimpse of what may have happened in our family, even if that story's been lost or kept secret, and can help us explain why we feel the way we feel.
You know, years and years ago, people probably would have, you know, sat around as families and shared stories and passed these stories on from generation to generation. But you're right, in our culture, we don't tend to do that. You know, I remember a friend of mine always trying to get his dad to share stuff about the war that he was in, about Second World War. And he just wouldn't talk about it. It just absolutely closed off. But actually, it would have been super helpful for everyone if that conversation could have been had.
Absolutely. You know, any way we cut it, memories of trauma, memories of our parents' traumas are imprinted in their sperm cells and egg cells. And that goes for our grandparents too. And then this information passes forward to us. And then as a result, you and I can be born with altered brains that prepare us to biologically cope with traumas that are similar to the traumas that our parents experienced or our grandparents are experienced, or in the case you talk about, the war trauma that his father experienced.
Yeah, absolutely. And how come, you know, some people, you know, seem to have a lot of issues with this, and some people don't? You know, not everyone manifests with this, or at least we don't know on the surface.
No, that's absolutely true. So what I've seen, you know, most of us have trauma in our family history, but you're right. What is that piece? What seems to anchor these traumas? Why do some of us seem to manifest them? What creates these repetitions? So what I see is when traumas aren't talked about, or the healing is incomplete, which is common because the pain is too great, the grief is too great, the embarrassment, the shame. People don't, you know, we run away from what's uncomfortable and we move toward what's easy. But that leaves unresolved traumas in our family history. Or what I also see is people in our family history or our family system, they're excluded or rejected. For example, we don't talk about alcoholic grandpa who drank away all the money, left grandma with five kids. You know, we just dislike him and we don't want to be like him. So whenever there's not any resolution, then aspects of these traumas can show up in later generations. In other words, unconsciously, we'll repeat the pattern, or we'll share a similar unhappiness or a similar behavior until that trauma finally has a chance to heal. Hey, Freud observed this over 100 years ago when he talked about repetition compulsion, the idea that traumas will continue until that trauma has a chance to seek a better outcome. I look at it this way. The contraction of the trauma is always seeking its expansion, which is a, you know, so the trauma really gives us an opportunity for healing for ourselves, healing for our family, healing for our children.
Yeah. And so, you know, obviously the question everyone's going to want to know the answer to is then how do we heal then? And first off, you know, at what point do most people sort of maybe even start to recognize, okay, there might be something going on here. How can they then begin to heal?
Okay. So, you know, you're asking me two good questions and I think they both deserve, let me start with, how do we recognize it in ourselves? And then let me go to how we heal. I think that's a good, sequence. So how do we recognize it? That we can be born with an anxiety or a depression. That's true. And we can never separate it from the events of the previous generation, which is true. We don't think about that. But we can also experience a fear or a symptom that strikes suddenly or unexpectedly, maybe when we reach a certain age, age 30 in the family. Maybe age 30 was the age grandpa died and grandma was a widow and she never marries again. Or it can also happen not just at ages. It can happen at certain milestones or certain events in our lives. For example, as soon as we get married, that can be a triggering event. In the book, you remember I talked about this woman. She loves her fiance. She thinks he's the greatest guy in the world. But then as soon as she's married, she feels trapped and she doesn't understand it. So when we looked in her family history, we saw that both grandmothers had been given away as child brides, one at age nine and one at age 12 in Iraq to much older men. And then what was further interesting were the traumas expressed differently in both her sisters. The one sister married a man 30 years older, like the grandmothers, and the other sister refused to even date at all, lest she be trapped. So one trigger can be when we go to get married. Another trigger can be when we move to a new place, and then suddenly we feel depressed, even if we moved across town, because our ancestors, maybe when they lived in a country, perhaps they were persecuted or they were forced out of their homeland. And, you know, they never, they always longed for their family members who were left behind or the people who died, or they moved to this new place where they felt like foreigners. So, you know, that can be a triggering event, moving. Yeah. Or we get rejected by our partner. And even if we only dated this partner for, you know, 3-4 months, all of a sudden we feel this grief is insurmountable. But it's not that grief because we weren't with that partner that long. Mm. It's taking us back to a much earlier grief, perhaps a break in the attachment with our mothers when we were little.
Yeah.
Another triggering event can be having a child. And then there's this ancestral alarm clock that starts ringing inside us and saying, misery, pain. I one time worked with this woman. She was consumed with anxiety and she had no idea what was going on. For example, I said, let's ask some questions here. Let's look at this anxiety. When did it start? And she said, I don't know, 7 months ago. And I said, what happened 7, 8, 9 months ago? And she said, well, that's when I got pregnant. And I said, what's the worst fear that you have about being pregnant or having a baby? And immediately she said, I'll harm my baby. That's my fear. And I asked her if she'd ever harmed a baby. And she said, of course not. And then I said, did anyone in your family ever harm a baby? And she's just about to say no. And then this memory arises and she says, oh, wait a minute. My grandmother, when she was a young woman, she lit a candle And then that caught the curtains on fire and the house on fire, but the baby was upstairs sleeping and she couldn't get the baby out. And then she said, but we were never allowed to talk about it. Right. And in that moment, you know, that's what I talked about earlier with you, is when situations or people are exiled or pushed away or not allowed to be talked about or not allowed to be resolved. In that moment, she made the link that she was carrying the terror from her grandmother's life, and then we could break the pattern.
So those are
ways in which we can tell if we're carrying trauma. And then your other question, which is really important, how do we heal? So healing, you know, it's not that difficult. I mean, healing for inherited trauma or early trauma is still the same. We've got to have positive experiences that can change our brain. And then we need to practice the new feelings and the new sensations that arise, that are associated with these new positive experiences. So, and then when we do that, we, you know, we create new neural pathways in our brain. That's part of how we heal. But also we stimulate the release of feel-good neurotransmitters in our brain, serotonin, dopamine, GABA. We also stimulate the release of feel-good hormones in our body, estrogen, oxytocin, even the very genes involved in our body stress response can begin to function in a different way. You know, I just want to tell the listener, we can change the way our DNA expresses. So these positive experiences can be practices that we have to continue practicing, practices of receiving comfort, that can be a practice, or receiving support, that can be a practice. I teach that in the book. Or I also teach how to have feelings of compassion for ourselves, for what we went through, or for our parents, for what they went through, our grandparents, for what they went through. Or it can be, these practices can be a gratitude practice. Yeah. You know, like Oprah used to tell us. Oprah used to say, have a gratitude practice. Well, why? Because these types of experiences feed the prefrontal cortex and can help us reframe the stress response. So it has a chance to downregulate. Also a loving kindness practice or mindfulness, really anything that allows us to feel strength or peace or joy inside, because these experiences, as I said, can feed the prefrontal cortex and help us calm that stress response. So ultimately the idea is to pull energy away or traction away from the limbic brain, the limbic system, our overactive amygdala, and bring energy, bring engagement to the forebrain, specifically the prefrontal cortex again, where we can integrate these new experiences and our brains can change. You know, Janie, we know from mindfulness studies that just practicing mindfulness can actually shrink the amygdala and thicken the cortex, the prefrontal cortex.
Thank you, Mark. I'll put the link to the book again in the show notes. It Didn't Start With You. And don't forget, if you're interested in family constellations, all you need is to come along is an open mind. And if you're in the UK, then Sunday, 22nd of January, we have a workshop in Hertfordshire. And then we'll do something online as well. But of course, there's a huge benefit to being able to come along in person if that works for you. So just go to thesoberclub.com, click on events. You'll also find there the link to our Setting Your Intentions online workshop, which is just a really small charge for the Give Back Fund. That's on Monday the 2nd at 4 p.m. A huge thank you to you for listening. A huge thank you to all my guests and to brands that have come on board and offered us amazing competitions. We really, really appreciate it. Always drop me a message. Let me know how you're getting on. I'd love to know what your intention is for the new year. If you are stopping drinking, if you're right now made this decision, then absolutely go for it. And you've got to tell someone, so you can tell me if you like. And obviously you can come on board and join us in the Sober Club. Happy New Year. See you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by the Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.